Lord Orlebrook. The question I have relates to a subject that may well have been covered in the body of the report, but I haven't had a chance to read it as yet. We are talking about globalization, which is an all-embracing thing, and we do have the WTO, and yet Australia is still engaged in free trade agreements on a bilateral basis, where we have signed a number of agreements and we are currently negotiating a number of agreements, and I'd like the views of the panel on their desirability or otherwise.
Well, in a perfect world, I think everybody would prefer a multilateral response to these sorts of issues, so I think there'd be no disagreement from anyone that ideally we would have a multilateral approach to trade and investment issues and trade liberalisation and investment liberalisation, but we don't live in that perfect world, and the fact is we've been able to achieve quite significant breakthroughs through free trade agreements with a number of countries. For example, the free trade agreement with the United States has really opened up a lot more business exchange between the two countries. It's liberalised that quite a bit. It's given us a fast track to address any problems that we might have. For example, the sort of opportunities, to give you a sense of some of the opportunities that have opened up to us, we've got Austal ships in Perth, which makes the aluminium multi-hull catamarans. They're currently with General Dynamics building a prototype series of boats for the US Navy. If that order goes ahead into full-scale production, it'll be in excess of $10 billion. They'll be setting up major ship building facilities in the United States. There'll be huge intellectual property income for Australia out of that kind of opportunity. I think without the FTA with the US, the shipbuilding industry in the United States is highly protected. The defence industry is highly protected. Without that kind of arrangement, there would have been no opportunity for Austal ships to do that sort of thing. Similarly, INCAT are also exploring opportunities in the United States. In China, just last week, some people came to me from the architectural business. They're building a number of schools for the expatriate community throughout China. There's a whole range of issues associated with they can do bits of these schools but not other bits because of rules and regulations in China. We have a whole range of skills in engineering design, in low energy use, which could be taken into the Chinese market. Currently they're blocked by various rules and regulations in China. So these are the sort of bread and butter issues that get taken up in FTAs. They don't typically get much airplay in the multilateral trade environment, which tends to get caught up with things like agriculture and north-south relations and a whole range of political posturing and so forth. In many cases, we're talking about things which both countries in a bilateral trade agreement can agree, win-win situations for both countries, so it's not a matter of, you know, once the facts are put on the table, the bureaucrats, the politicians can all agree that we're finding a win-win situation. So, yes, multilateralism is lovely. It would be wonderful if it worked. But there's a whole range of things we can do bilaterally. I hope that answers the question, does it?
Good afternoon. I'm John Egan from Toyota. I've got a question for Andrew McCready. I can understand the founder of Acer Computers coming up with a smiley face diagram to justify the outsourcing of their production to a lower cost operation in China. I just wondered if you're aware of any empirical data that actually supports that smiley face, particularly when you take into account the supply chain implications.
Well, clearly a lot of these, as I mentioned at the end of my talk, you know, a lot of these decisions are decisions for companies themselves to make, not for governments. And I guess part of Stan Chia's message to the president of Taiwan was this is really a decision for Acer Computer. Acer Computer saw its future in adopting that strategy. and certainly other competitor companies to Acer were adopting that strategy. And so I guess part of the message to Taiwanese authorities was, if we don't go down that track, we might lose a lot more of the business than if we try and maintain manufacture in Taiwan. I mean, in the case, say, of the TCF industry, which I mentioned in my talk, Taiwan, Korea, Hong Kong all had very substantial textile, clothing and footwear industries, much bigger than Australia's. They were all faced with a competition from China, just like we were. We spent $1.3 billion supporting our TCF industry. None of those economies, Taiwan, Hong Kong or Korea, spent any money whatsoever on supporting their TCF industry. They accepted the fact that they were going to lose production to the lower cost economy and that their future was in the higher value added areas. So I know that hollowing out, outsourcing issue is incredibly difficult for politicians, and it is obviously difficult for industry analysts like myself, but the amount of funds that are available for industry support are limited, and you've got to make decisions about, is it a sensible thing to do to support, say, a TCF industry or a low-grade computer manufacturing industry in Australia or in Taiwan. Well, that's not to say that manufacturing isn't important. Clearly, there are elements of manufacturing that are enormously important to Australia and in which we can sustain high-paying jobs in this country. But it's not going to be in these very low value-added activities.
Knox City Council. Our city is interested in increasing investment in sustainable technologies at any level within the supply chain. I guess I'm asking the whole panel about opportunities that exist in that area in terms of sustainability. We have constraints when we're competing, but what can we do to advance our use of the knowledge in that area?
I'll make a couple of comments. It's actually quite an interesting area for Australia. I mean, there are a number of companies that are doing interesting work in this space, but actually, again, if you look at R&D, the R&D data, there's been declining investment, certainly in relative terms, in environmental-related R&D in both the public and private sector in Australia over the last 10 years. And that may mean that there are some particularly interesting opportunities at the moment, or it may mean that... you know, you'd be flying a flag on your own. My suspicion is that there's an awful lot of exciting and very innovative environmentally related work happening, but it's often not labelled as, you know, about sustainability or the environment. The sustainability questions are often overlapping with economic ones anyway, and I suspect in the long run. Instead of sort of targeting some special sustainability initiative, a local council would just be better off looking at what are the problems, the specific problems that you need to solve, and just focusing on those issues at a very sort of pragmatic and practical level. That would be my thought.
Thank you.